It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As a state assembly task force announces a slate of bills to combat human trafficking and support victims, especially children, we discuss prevention steps and get reaction from an organization that works to end trafficking and publishes state-by-state report cards on this public health issue. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sydney McCoy is Director of Advocacy for Shared Hope International. Sydney, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning, Kate. Thanks so much for having me.
Good morning. We will talk about the new legislation in just a bit, but first let's focus on your organization's report card on Wisconsin's anti-trafficking laws. Shared Hope International evaluates all 50 states and D.C., on laws addressing sex trafficking, and Wisconsin is among more than 30 states to receive this F rating. Why are so many places failing your organization's assessments?
Yeah, great question. I think just to provide some context, it might be helpful. So Shared Hope started releasing report cards in 2011, and under the framework that we were analyzing states under back in 2011, we were really focused on ensuring that states had, standalone child sex trafficking statutes and laws that would really hold offenders accountable. And so by the time we got to 2019, a majority of states had really achieved A's and B's in this area. And so we started to really develop a new framework that was, informed by field experts and the research that we had been collecting. And so this new framework that we released in 2020 has really shifted the focus from offender accountability to victim protections, which we had seen was a huge gap in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. And so under this new framework, we are looking at 40 policy goals that spans across 6 different issue areas. And when we made this shift, we really did see many states' grades go down significantly. But we like to remind folks that we're really only grading on statutory analysis. We aren't grading on any regulations or internal policies or case law or implementation. And so while we understand that these non-legislative responses are critical, grading on a statutory analysis really provides a clear mechanism for evaluating policy goals across all states, mm-hmm. while ensuring that survivor-centered reforms are really an enduring part of a state's response. And so that kind of explains why many states have received a failing grade. Again, because we're only focusing on the statutory analysis.
Yeah.
But I would also say that for a very long time, states have responded to this issue from a criminal justice standpoint, and this framework really shifts to that more public health standpoint. And so we're just wanting, lawmakers and legislatures to really kind of shift that focus to victim services.
I want to ask you about that, because human trafficking can be viewed through that criminal justice lens. It can also be approached through a public health prevention perspective. What is the difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a place for both responses. Certainly, Shared Hope really sees the value in holding offenders accountable. But in the states that we have seen doing the best at really responding to this issue, they're meeting every criminal justice response with really robust victim protections. And one of the reasons why that's so critical is because oftentimes when, law enforcement or prosecutors are trying to hold those offenders accountable, the people they rely on for those arrests and convictions are the victims themselves. And so victims really need to feel like they can trust law enforcement, they can trust prosecutors, that their needs will be met with, a continuum of care and supportive services to really make sure that they're in a place of healing, that they can actually participate in the criminal process.
And Wisconsin performed the worst in the prevention and training category. And the organization, Shared Hope International, says training gaps remain in all areas. How could states like Wisconsin alter its approach to human trafficking prevention and training in particular?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we see in the anti-trafficking space is victims usually aren't self-identifying. Many victims actually don't even know that what's happening to them is considered trafficking until they've been removed from the situation and had the opportunity to receive some, mental health counseling and other supportive services. And so for the stakeholders that are constantly coming in contact with victims, so that would be law enforcement, really any criminal justice stakeholder. There's a huge overlap between child victims and juvenile justice and child welfare. So we really want to make sure that these stakeholders are in a position to be able to identify victims, since victims are unlikely to identify themselves. And so for our prevention and training issue area that we create on, we're really looking to see if states are mandating training for those stakeholders. And so I think that's one way that we can really increase that prevention, is because we're increasing that identification and more able to connect victims to the services that they need.
But to have training, you have to have a budget line. You have to have that consistent funding in place. It has to be deployed by an organizing type office. How adequately is Wisconsin and other states with resources to stop trafficking and support survivors, as you called, survivor-centered reforms?
Yeah, I think the majority of states are definitely not appropriating the funding that's necessary, not only for the training, but certainly for the services that are necessary to provide victims. I will say that Wisconsin's neighbors in Minnesota are doing a really fantastic job with the amount of funding they're appropriating annually to this issue. And so there are states that are doing, a really good job of ensuring that we're actually, with any mandate, we're also having funding that's available to carry out those mandates. So I would encourage Wisconsin lawmakers to really look at the states that are performing best and try to kind of replicate some of those responses.
Because I think if you rely specifically on grants to get to provide any types of services, that may not those grants may not always come through. Is that an issue?
Yeah, it's absolutely an issue. And then on top of the funding, oftentimes the service providers that are tasked with this issue often have other barriers that they have to jump through to receive that funding. Obviously, housing insecurity is a huge vulnerability for folks who can be exploited. And so, especially when we're talking about shelter and youth shelter, there are so many different like licensing requirements that those organizations have to go through that sometimes it's just not even worth it for the money that they would receive through a grant. So all things to consider when a lawmaker is, thinking about grant programs and all of the different licensing and other requirements that a grantee would have to really comply with in order to receive that funding.
We're talking about efforts to eliminate sex trafficking in Wisconsin with Sydney McCoy, who's Advocacy Director for Shared Hope International. You can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sydney, you talk about the good work happening in our neighbor, Minnesota. Tennessee is the only state to receive an A rating in your latest report cards for child and youth sex trafficking laws. What stands out about Tennessee? What is it doing right that other states could model?
Yeah, well, funny you mention it. Tennessee is doing a really great job in the mandated training issue area that we analyze on. So, definitely doing really great work as far as prevention and training. Additionally, Tennessee also has a pretty robust shared, or I'm sorry, safe harbor response. So, for listeners who may not be familiar with safe harbor, it is at its core really shifting to a protective response rather than a punitive one for minors engaging in commercial sex. Commonly refers to the non-criminalization of minors for prostitution-related offenses. So Tennessee is doing a really good job in ensuring that minors are protected from criminalization for prostitution-related offenses, but then additionally connecting them with services to make sure that they're really, removed from that situation and have an opportunity to receive all of the supportive services that they need to not return to the life. And really, I think they've been able to achieve this because of the leadership we've seen out of the governor's office with the support of advocates in the Tennessee Anti-Slavery Alliance, which is really a statewide community-based service response.
Why is establishing safe harbor laws, why are these important for your organization?
Well, first and foremost, safe harbor really recognizes that no minor is engaging in commercial sex by choice. And in fact, that is both true in federal law and Wisconsin state law. In Wisconsin, the definition of child sex trafficking includes any minor who's engaged in commercial sex. But unfortunately, the prostitution code still allows for the arrest and prosecution of minors for trafficking. And so, one, just wanting to make sure that everything is really uniform, but also in order to provide the victims with the services that they need, we need to first identify them and treat them as victims and not as criminals. And so if we still are allowing law enforcement to arrest minors, one, that does not do a great job of actually creating the rapport that's needed between law enforcement and the minor to potentially go after a trafficker or an exploiter. But also, we're really failing to respond appropriately to that minor's needs. We should be meeting them with protective response. We should be meeting them with the services that they need. And we should not be considering them a victim for a crime that is really, inherent in their victimization.
Sydney McCoy is Advocacy Director at Shared Hope International. That's a nonprofit devoted to ending sex trafficking. Be part of the discussion. Call in with the question. You can share your comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the public health issue of sex trafficking in Wisconsin and learn about new initiatives to address what the National Human Trafficking Hotline calls a form of modern slavery. Share your thoughts. You can raise a question. The number to join the discussion is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sydney McCoy is Director of Advocacy for Shared Hope International. That's a nonprofit working to end sex trafficking. Sydney, our bipartisan task force here in Wisconsin has introduced a slate of bills to address our state's response to sex trafficking. And one proposal would create a council to compile information on human trafficking crimes and develop a prevention plan. Are other states taking a similar approach?
Yeah, we've seen a couple of states really devote, significant energy into creating like a human trafficking council, or many states also have an executive, trafficking coordinator that's really doing similar work. So kind of surveying the state and its response and then making recommendations to the legislature on how to improve that response.
What is an effective way to structure coordination when you have like state government efforts, you have the work of nonprofits, mm-hmm. you have stand-up committees and communities? How can you coordinate and collaborate on this work?
Sure. I think the best way to do that is to make sure that the folks that are responding to this issue are all at the table. It would be, the best case scenario for this council to be made up of a number of different stakeholders, including those who are providing the nonprofit, direct services, and ideally also having survivors at the table as well. Survivors and people with lived experience really are the experts in what they need. And so I would always encourage, anytime we're creating a body that is supposed to be strategizing a state's response to this issue is really including the voices of the people who are lived experience experts, because again, they know what they need best.
Can we step back and look at what are some common signs of human trafficking?
Sure. So some vulnerabilities that I think are really critical for folks to be aware of is, cycles of poverty, housing insecurity. These are really big indicators that somebody is vulnerable to being exploited. Specifically, when we're looking at young people, any type of interaction they've had with a child serving system. So juvenile justice and child welfare systems, unfortunately, create a big risk and vulnerability to being exploited. Specifically, those kids that are considered kind of the homeless and runaway population. Shared Hope actually partners with a wonderful organization in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Association for Runaway and Homeless Services, who do excellent work there and are very engaged on this issue. So really, looking at the vulnerabilities, I think it's the biggest thing to be looking out for is those people who are, in cycles of poverty and experiencing housing insecurity, interacting with the child welfare, juvenile justice, even sometimes the criminal justice systems. Those are really kind of the places where you're going to be seeing exploitation happening most often.
Sometimes we might hear communities shift the focus or say the focus of trafficking is happening because through, larger cities like Chicago or Milwaukee, and what's happening here is a byproduct of what's happening in larger cities. How do you view the geography of trafficking and its role in this issue?
Yeah, I mean, we see trafficking happening in every community. It's happening in big urban areas, it's happening in suburban areas, and it's happening in rural areas. And it might look slightly different, but at the core of it is if there's a person who's not getting their needs met, either because they're unemployed or they're experiencing homelessness, there's usually somebody who is really skilled at identifying those people, meeting those needs, grooming them, and then unfortunately turning them out and kind of expecting them to sell their bodies to kind of repay that person for meeting those needs. So, and this is happening in all communities.
Several of these proposed bills here in Wisconsin would require police and students above seventh grade and certain workers to receive training on recognizing trafficking. We've talked about training. How effective is this type of training to prevention?
I mean, it's hugely critical that we have the people who are in positions of identifying trafficking know what to be looking for. Specifically, those individuals who are also mandated reporters. So in Wisconsin, sex trafficking is a form of child abuse. And so if you are a mandated reporter, you are required to report that if a young person discloses that to you, or if you even just suspect it. But so often, because we see trafficking portrayed in the media a certain way, regular people who aren't doing this work every day just don't have a firm grasp on what it actually is looking like. So the training is really the first step in making sure that people are identified as as trafficking victims. And so then you're able to connect them with the supportive services they need.
Sydney McCoy with us, Director of Advocacy for Shared Hope International, as we discuss legislation that supporters say would help reduce human trafficking here in Wisconsin. Questions and comments are welcome at 800-642-1234. Sydney, one bill from the task force would raise the maximum penalties for soliciting prostitution and establish a mandatory minimum prison sentence ranging from 6 months for a first offense to 3 years for a fourth or subsequent offense. Would raising legal penalties in these cases help reduce trafficking?
There have been a number of states that have really shifted the focus in this space to going after the demand side of things. So really holding accountable those individuals who are purchasing commercial sex, whether or not we are seeing that actually have a disincentive effect, I think is still going to be something that we continue to see as these efforts become more common. Certainly it is a policy goal for Shared Hope to make sure that people who are purchasing commercial sex are being held accountable. I always say that any type of attempt to increase the penalties against exploiters or purchasers should really be met with that robust victim protection piece, though, because unfortunately it is not uncommon for what we call victim offender intersectionality, where a victim of trafficking is unfortunately forced or coerced into committing crimes themselves. And so Wisconsin actually has an affirmative defense law for victims of human trafficking. And so protections like that are really critical in ensuring that there isn't any unjust criminalization of victims themselves.
In our final moments together, looking at your report cards over the years, is it possible that states can have some great advancements, but then eventually backslide? Do you see progress and then a bit of slippage?
Not commonly,
okay.
But there are definitely situations where a state has enacted a piece of legislation and then the implementation has not been wonderful. And because of that, the legislature has been, tempted to kind of roll back some of those protections. But majority of the time, specifically when we're thinking about safe harbor and preventing the unjust criminalization of victims, we've actually seen states to go on and expand those protections. So they'll start with prostitution and then they'll expand it to other offenses.
Sydney, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Sydney McCoy is with Shared Hope International, a nonprofit organization devoted to ending sex trafficking. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.